When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Everybody.
It's great. We've got people from Ecuador. We've got people from Wales, Massachusetts, USA. Fantastic. Hello, Cheryl Bell. This is fantastic. Fiona.
This is amazing. I genuinely thought it was going to be me and John talking to one other person, if that. So we're really chuffed you're all here. Thank you for joining us.
Hello, Sharon from the Netherlands. Hello, Helen from Naples. Donna from Alaska. This is so cool. People are just making these places up, Angela. It's Alaska Road.
No, Alaska does exist, John. It does exist. I've been there.
No, I meant pretending to be from there. They're from Alaska Road in
Deutschland. Deutschland.
Narnia. We've got Caroline Smith is calling from Narnia. That's very impressive. So
amazing. So many new people. So, oh my gosh, we're up to over nearly 50 now. This is quite incredible.
Hello. But this, you know what this means, John, don't you? It means that people actually listen to our
waffling. It's amazing. You never know. We never know when you put these things out.
Yeah. It's a bit of a worry, really. I feel like I've got to be a bit more careful what I say now. I know people actually listen.
Oh, dear.
Right. Well, should we kick off with some questions, do you think?
Yeah.
Should we do it? Right, so, fantastic. Okay. Yeah. Well, what have we got? We've got Sarah Tennant and Eleanor Spatchett both actually sent very similar question to you both, which is there anyone or any part of history that you've point blank crossed off the list, like refused to cover, don't want to go there? And if so, why?
Ooh, good question, Sarah from Scotland. Good evening.
Yeah, I think, John, you'd agree, there's not an area that we've gone, we're absolutely not covering that, apart from repeal of the corn laws for the sole reason that it just bores our tits off.
I'd be interested to rise to the challenge of making that interesting.
You're doing that next episode. I'll write that down. John's doing repeal of the corn laws next series.
It's one of those things that sounds really boring, but it's really important because it split the Tory party and the Irish famine is in there. And it's land versus industry. It's got everything.
I completely glazed over then, John. Were you still talking?
I want to do a musical about the repeal of the corn laws now.
I think for us that it's tricky, isn't it? Because we're very aware that we're two sort of white British people, and you want to kind of cover a wide range of subjects as far as possible. The way we choose things has been really just on whatever floats our boat, hasn't it? We haven't sat down and gone, right, we've got to make sure we cover this, that, because this is a passion project of ours. We're not, it's not for a channel that wants us to cover certain things or anything like that. But I do think that we do try and do, for example, stories about Black history, but we just have to make really sure that we're doing it, with an awareness of who we are and our voices, and that we're not projecting who we are onto that history. It's quite a tricky sort of line to follow, that, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I like to explain feminism to Angela.
Yes, does that quite a lot.
Yeah, so I do things like women's suffrage and women's rights in Ireland, and Angela's like, oh, this is so interesting. I didn't know anything about this. Was it unfair?
Yeah, that's right, John. That's exactly what happened. I had no idea that women had such issues. I like how you say that you chose to do women's suffrage. You actually chose to do the campaign against women's suffrage, if I remember right.
We don't hear enough of those voices as well.
Wow, nice.
So I would say, I'd say just one other addendum on that. There are things you go, well, do we want to add to this particular narrative? So a friend of mine wrote a book about white Europeans who were captured by North African pirates and enslaved. And we talked about, do we want to do a podcast on the Europeans who were put to slavery? And it's the sort of thing that would just give the sort of GB News lot such a sort of, yeah, see, it was on both sides. And we just think, we don't really need to particularly add to that sort of narrative. You know, the victims of the slave trade were black people, let's be honest. So I didn't want to do about any something that might have been whataboutery and might have ended up sort of helping people or on the enemy of progress and equality. So that was sort of like, we talked that one out, I think. So that's an example of something we thought, no, I don't think we want to do that.
John?
Yeah, it's an interesting story, but actually our contribution to that debate, it just wouldn't have been helpful for anyone for us to cover that, I don't think. Yeah.
Oh, nice bit of merch you've got there, John. Where did that come from?
Oh, I just happened to have this here.
Hello.
Oh, what a coincidence. I was just sipping grabbing the nearest mug.
Wow.
And I'm so hot in this shirt. God, I feel so hot.
I can't believe you've got a t-shirt and I haven't.
It's on a hierarchy. You have to pay more. Fair enough. You have to sign up for a better patron than you've signed up for. Anyway.
Not only do you get paid more for doing the podcast for being a man, I have to wait for the merch. I mean, come on.
Oh, my goodness.
It's a joke.
Big accusations you're throwing at Podmasters.
It's a joke, guys.
John Rennie would...
I'm actually paid more than John, but he doesn't know that.
Oh, no.
John Rennie was actually asking in like relation to the last question. He was saying, do you think you might actually bring in any guests, especially for things you're not comfortable with? Or you, I mean, from my point of view, I really enjoy the dynamic that you have because you're very clearly, you don't talk, you know, you're not historians. You're not trying to kind of uncover the secret truth. It's like actually, it's not just about that. Do you know what I mean? It's about your relationship as well.
I think you're right. I think that's part of that. We've had one episode with a guest. We had Hallie Rubenhold. Is that her name? Rubenhold,
yes.
If I got that
yes.
right. Yes. When we discussed the five, the victims of Jack the Ripper. And that was really fascinating because she'd written the book and John knew her and she came in. And that's the only time we've had a guest and it worked really nicely. But I think that the difference between our podcast maybe and other history podcasts is that we're not experts teaching you. We are learning at the same time you are. So we might have read the books a week earlier, but we're not experts, you know, imparting our wisdom. We're going, listen to this interesting thing we've just found out about, we want to tell you about. And I think that's the sort of different thing about our podcast, that we're not, it's not a lesson in history. It's just a sort, more of a kind of book club almost, isn't it?
Yeah. I've got a couple of friends who are both historians and I've mentioned both of them to Angela as possible guests. And I just found out they're starting a podcast together. So I think
get screwed then.
The bottom line is we don't know anyone who's a historian who hasn't got their own podcast already. So
no, there is that as well. Yeah. We have thought about it. You know, there's been a few episodes where we've read books from, I was going to say, written by people that we know, written by people that John knows, let's be honest. Right. And we've thought, oh, we could get that. There's an episode in the next series that we've just recorded based on a book written by the Labour MP, Chris Bryan. And we discussed that, didn't we? Sort of maybe interviewing him. And then we thought, actually, we quite like it the way we do it, I think. And he's done podcasts talking about the book. He's done interviews in newspapers talking about the book. And actually, this is something different.
It's because it's partly about the chemistry between me and Angela and about, you know, the fact that I'm a posh bloke and she's, you know, a less posh woman. And the fun we have with her.
Say it, John. Say what you want to say. Less posh.
I think it's good, great to have four sugars in your tea.
Oh dear! I've displayed your book on my bookshelf and everything.
Oh, thank you. I didn't think to do that.
One of them because I couldn't find the others. I can only find one.
Somebody just saying John Rennie is just saying, I remember the Hallie Rubenhold episode and I bought the book. Well, that's great. We love that. We love it when people hear the podcast and think, oh, I'm going to actually read more about that. And that's why we don't mind, you know, liberally mining their books to talk about them because they get sales and it's great.
We had somebody, I can't remember who it was. There was an author who tweeted us after an episode and said, I wondered why suddenly my book sales had gone up. I suddenly sold a load of books that week. And I was going to work out why. And it's because of your thing. Yeah. So that's, we really like that. that's why we always tell people what we've read, and you know, yeah. especially if it's something that we've really enjoyed, because that's, you get so much, you know, we just give you a taster of it, obviously, in an hour.
Right, well, let me see what's next. We've got so many questions coming in as well. Angela, who, Jennifer would like to know, who is your favourite Cold War woman? Since you are the Cold War woman.
My favourite Cold War woman?
Well, I think I should answer this one, if I could just come in.
I'll just sit this out and let John speak loudly over me. That's how that works. No, it's a good question. It's a tricky one because... A lot of women did a lot of things in the Cold War, but we don't know their names. There was a lot, particularly at the end of the Cold War in the 1989 revolutions and all of the stuff that went on across Eastern Europe. A lot of those peaceful revolutions were, you know, it was women starting them or women certainly taking part in them, but we don't necessarily know their names because they don't make the history books, for, you know, when you do things quietly. In the background. So my favourite, it's tempting to say people, like, you know, your favourite Cold War woman doesn't mean you necessarily agree with everything they did and said. But someone like, I suppose Agent Sonya really is World War II, although she was, you know, she was still post-World War II passing secrets to the Soviets. But, you know, kick ass in her own way, you know, in a world of men. But I think the women that... John and I have discussed on the podcast that really affected both of us, actually, and was the Greenham Common women. Would you agree with that?
Yeah,
John?
That's a really good one. Determination of some of those women who, just against all the odds, just kept turning up and doing what they thought was right. And there was a woman who lost her life there, and we dedicated that episode to her. So there's something very heroic about them. I was going to actually say favorite Cold War woman. I would say Margaret Thatcher for single-handedly ending the Cold War all on her own.
I almost said that just to wind you up. I almost said, well, you know, just because she was the only female big player, really. But
yeah, she ended the Cold War all by herself. Amazing. There are lots of Americans who think that Reagan ended the Cold War just by going to Berlin and say, tear down this wall. And then it came down. And it's like...
It came down 3 years later or something, didn't it?
Yeah, like, yeah. But... Yeah, that was Greenham Common. That's a good call, Angela. And I thought that was an episode I was proud of.
Yeah, we really got some. And it's Helen John, wasn't it? Was the first woman.
Yes.
Yeah. One woman from Cardiff who just
did it.
And then dedicated her whole life, really, to
the peace campaign. And paid a personal price, you know. But then there's people all over. The trouble with women in history, as you may have noticed, they tend to get slightly forgotten. So there's all these... amazing women, you know, across Eastern Europe who were battling away and being courageous. And, you know, they're not Gorbachev and they're not, you know, Vaclav Havel or whatever. And sometimes their stories aren't told. That's partly our responsibility to find those.
Yeah, there's a real, you know, I've read quite a lot in, obviously, Cold War history is my area of where I'm a bit of a nerd, and particularly East Germany. And you read a lot, particularly about East German socialism, about how it was a sort of feminist regime in many ways, that women had more equality and that they had more. And there's an argument for that in as much as, you know, women were working and there was free childcare and there were things to, but the motivations for that weren't really feminist as much as, you know, it was all hands on deck really. And women were in that. And so I'm not sure, it's a tricky one because, you know, can you say that women had equal rights or that women had rights at all when they had no freedoms? You know, it's a tricky one, but it does mean that there were women all over Eastern Europe doing incredible things. And in the resistance in East Germany, in our, it was in the Stasi Poets episode, you might remember, there was the girl, Annegret Gollin, was it Gollin, I want to say, who had written that poem. She'd written like just a short poem about the concrete blocks that were going up, the von blocks, the housing blocks. And she wrote a poem about it and was arrested as a dissident for writing a poem about social housing, you know. And then the rest of her life, she was stopped from going to university. She was stopped from doing the career she wanted to do for this quiet little act of rebellion. And there were women doing that all over Eastern Europe during the Cold War. Amazing. And of course there were female spies. You had your Daphne Parks and your, you know, the equivalents in the US that were probably as active in running those networks and getting intelligence as any men were, but just more quietly getting on with it because they weren't suspected because they were women with children or whatever. So very under the radar.
We've got a message here from someone saying, I was a Greenham Common woman, so thank you, which is great.
Oh, wow.
She's had to actually change her name. She now goes by the name Samsung SM S908B. But that's a Samsung. Thank you, Samsung. that's great to hear.
That's absolutely amazing. Someone else has just asked, Kenneth asked, he didn't remember the Greenham Common episode. What number is it? I can't find the number, but I know that it was out in March 2022. So it's quite a while ago. So if you scroll right back through your player, because I was going to say all these amazing episodes we're talking about, they are available like in perpetuity.
Yeah, they're always available.
So,
Someone's popped Fiona. It in. Season 5, episode 7. Well done,
Fiona.
Fiona,
come up with us. Oh, thank my God, we've got a link.
Oh, and a link. God, you guys are good.
Shame.
Yeah. I mean, that is one thing about doing this podcast is that they stay, you can listen to them, you know, in a year's time. And all the podcasts like the news agents, those guys are getting huge numbers, but it's not going to last. You're not going to listen to that in a year's time. So I'm glad we're not doing a topical podcast, I'm glad it's something that I can listen to in 10 years' time if we still have the technology.
Definitely.
But yeah, so it's they're things that are evergreen, which is good, I think.
Catherine was, she asked, has the podcast taken you in different directions than you thought it would? And what new topics have you really got into? So obviously, Angela, you're, like you say, a Cold War nerd. Has there been other areas that you've suddenly thought, like has John sparked your interest in feminism?
Definitely. I had no interest at all until John explained it to me. No, I think when I first approached John to do the podcast, I think my idea or my first approach to you was to do a podcast about 20th century history. Yeah. That was my initial pitch to John. And I think John was a bit worried we'd run out of history quite quickly if we did that. So I was a little bit like, oh, because that's my interest in sort of modern history. And so I was a bit sort of, because I think, again, like so many people, I've been scarred by history lessons at school. You know, I didn't pursue history at school. I wish I had, but I didn't because I didn't have great history teachers, wasn't interested. And for me, I felt like, you know, talking about medieval kings and queens, you might as well have been talking, you know, it was the same as listening to The Princess and the Pea, as far as I was concerned. I didn't know where fairy tales ended and, you know, real story, historical medieval tales began. And it just didn't do it for me. I liked hearing about real people and I liked hearing about people that I could imagine their lives.
That's part of our job is to make those old people real. But I mean, we did one of the Battle of Hastings and Angela was like, oh, I'm not sure about this. And then I ended up going, and having the French invaders is why snobby people drink wine and we're not allowed to have beer at weddings. And Angela was like, yes,
I'm on board.
And she suddenly got all passionate, you know, and it was like, oh, wow, I found the way to unlock Angela's enthusiasm. We talked about the Saxons and alcohol. Suddenly we were flying.
But you made it about real people. And that's the thing I think that we try and do. We do have episodes where we talk about, you know, we haven't done many sort of kings and queens.
No, I did start one on a Magna Carta. And we both got a bit bored, didn't we, and stopped again.
Yeah, that's right. I don't want to do that. So I think that's what put people off at school. And for us, it's that sort of social history is what floats our boat a bit more. Yeah. And I think I just kind of not really engaged with that pre 18th, 19th century, really. And so thanks to the podcast, I sort of have a bit. So yeah, it definitely taken me in a direction I didn't expect it would. I mean, John had written a musical about the Black Death. So you're already back there.
Somebody's asked us a question about Something Rotten. I saw that come up. They said, would we do another theatre? Well, we did Child Actors, didn't we? Maybe we'll do.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Maybe we'll do another theatre thing. I don't know. It's about Angela basically chose the Child Actors one to take the mickey out of me as a child actor. And I've actually found the photo that
was
shared
on Twitter. There.
This is me this was when we talked about The Princess in the Tower. This is me as a child actor on the BBC talking about one of the Princess of the Tower, which I played. So there I am.
Look at that. Look at little John O'Farrell with your 70s hairdo.
I decided to interpret the character as David Cassidy.
Clearly.
Oh dear.
So John Child star. Weren't you also in Winnie the Pooh?
I was, but I'm not going to put that picture up. It's nothing to do with history. That's a proper historical context that's talking about it.
Very funny.
So
and he was in a horror film, weren't you?
Yeah, I've done all of it.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Hidden. This is history. This is interesting history too.
This is the history of John O'Farrell. This is like we've suddenly sprung This Is Your Life on you. Got a big red book here. Hang on. There we
are. talking about that kind of on that theme, I guess. So Matt says, looking back, do you think that history starts yesterday? Because yesterday is gone, or do you have to go back a generation, like around 25 years, for a topic to be considered as history that would allow the fall of the Berlin Wall to be included? I mean, this kind of makes us all feel a bit old if you're talking about things within our lifetime that's history. But do you have rules with that? Like, where do you guys stand?
No, because we did in January 2021, we did an episode about 2020. So about I think pandemic, that answers your question about the pandemic.
I think generally you get more perspective with a certain amount of distance, and it becomes, you know, more evidence is gathered. People write books about it. So, you know, we tend to base our episodes on a book. So, you know, the epic memoir of Liz Truss's premiership has yet to be written. Maybe one day we'll do that.
You should write it, John.
So I think a bit of distance is helpful for our purposes in terms of, you know, looking at it with 2020 vision. See what I did there, Angela.
Hey, clever. Well, otherwise it is just us commenting on current affairs, then it becomes a sort of topical.
Almost. Yeah.
I think it depends on what the subject is, I suppose. I think we've 2020 I think is that was a bit of an anomaly, obviously. We've done things sort of when we did the history of Christmas number ones. Obviously we go to the beginning of that and brought it up to present day. But I think there needs to be enough material on a topic for us to do a podcast on it. That's the key, isn't it?
Yeah. I've got I can see a question here. Anne-Marie, if you don't mind me jumping in, somebody's asking to see John's piece of the Berlin Wall. Angela always teases me
about not having one.
I have to confess, some people who listen to the Patreon event might have heard me talk about this. I had to confess to Angela that I didn't have a piece of the Berlin Wall. I have two pieces of the Berlin Wall. There they are. Look at those beauties. Genuine.
I think you'll all agree with me. They could be any old bits of rock. Look at that.
Even the graffiti.
Any
look
old
at
bits
that.
Of rock.
No, there's graffiti on that bit. That actually said,
it
you
says
know.
John O'Farrell was here. That's what are you talking about?
Now you've seen it. You can compare them to yours, Kirsty. Thanks for the question.
There you go. The ultimate myth debunked. Or proved.
I don't buy it. He just chiseled up a bit of his driveway. I'm not having it.
Right, what am I going to go for next? Oh, wow, there's so many great ones. Let me have a look. All right, this is quite fun. So,
hang on a minute. Can I just say, have I smeared Vaseline on my camera lens? Because it looks good. Cheeky bugger. No, I don't think so. Am I a bit foggy?
I think it's just your Wi-Fi, Angela.
It might be on Kenneth's
Wi-Fi. I mean, we've worked together for 10 years and we've never relied on your Wi-Fi, have we?
No, that's true. I'm just pixelated. Yeah. That's all it is.
It might be Kenneth's glasses.
Yeah, give your glasses a wipe, Kenneth.
Right, so it says, let's see, if you, Punham asks, if you could be present at any historical event, which would it be and why?
Oh, that's a good question, Angela.
I think mine's a bit obvious, isn't it?
Oh, but
what else would I say? It's got to be the fall of the Berlin Wall.
Do you know what? That's sort of that's not sort of impossible in your lifetime. That's what's the shame about that.
Well, as we know, as listeners to podcasts will know, I'd have had two reasons to celebrate that day because it was also my birthday. It came down on the 9th of November 1989, Angela Barnes's 13th birthday.
Ah, oh, sweet.
I would, you know, to have been there around that time would have been incredible. It feels like a really obvious cop-out answer from me, but I haven't. It is the truth. That's the moment I'd go back to.
There's so many. I don't know. I think I would like to have been at something that might have informed me more about it. So to have seen the atmosphere, for example, when Chamberlain came back from Munich, and everyone was going, "He's a hero," and I'm not going to gone to everyone 2 years later. No, you were in favour of it as well. You, and they would have gone, no, I thought at the time it wasn't going to work out. So that, I'm quite interested in that sort of bits of history that people have changed their mind on. But also to be in London on VE Day. What a party that must have been.
You would have kissed some sailors, wouldn't you, John?
I would have kissed the sailors and you know, just to have the dancing and the singing in Trafalgar Square, just that sense of relief that it was all over must have been amazing. Yeah. All over the country, really. But something where ordinary people were involved, yeah, that would have been quite something.
I think that's similar, isn't it, though, to the fall of the Berlin Wall? It's that sort of a celebratory, the end of something oppressive and awful, and the feelings and the parties and the, you know, that go with that. I think they're quite similar answers.
It's either,
really.
Well, either those two or when Ed Davey became leader of the Liberals. Those are the big three.
Who?
Brilliant. Olivia Niblock, I think, or Niblock, I'm not sure. So sorry, Olivia. She has requested, she's on the call. She says, of all the books that you've read while researching, which one was your favourite? She bought the Susanna Stapleton book on Maud West after the podcast.
Oh, brilliant. Good.
I'll tell you what, Angela introduced me to the brilliant book Stasiland by Anna Funder, and that's just such a good read. I mean, it's not just the subject, but it's just really well executed. So I would say that's up there for me as one of them. I would also pick out Hallie Rubenhold for changing the history on something. She has basically, with that one book, changed the narrative on Jack the Ripper. And now anyone who goes, oh, we're organising a Jack the Ripper theme night, people go, that's not okay. And these are the women, you can read about them here. So I think I've got great admiration for what she's done there and all the crap she got from amateur ripperologists, as they call themselves, for not you know, following them.
Yeah, I think I'd agree. I mean, again, it's the obvious answer for me, but Stasiland was kind of a book that started all this for me in many ways. And it's so beautiful. I've been lucky enough to interview Anna Funder, who wrote it. And it's just so accessible and so many incredible stories in it that if you haven't read it yet, please do. I'm trying to think we've read so much. I know I'll come off this call and think of six brilliant books that I've really enjoyed. I think actually I really enjoyed the Maud West book. That was really fun because it was written in such a sort of Agatha Christie style.
Yeah.
You know, and it was a lot of the books we read are quite heavy and, you know, sort of trying to get through pages and pages of quite tedious conferences or whatever. Whereas that was just pure.
Yeah.
Sort of fun.
I'm lucky that I'm a member of the London Library, which is like a private lending library in the central London with a million books. And I can walk along the shelves and sort of pick out the books and read a couple of pages. And I go, oh, this is up my street. Or alternatively, well, this is dry. And I sort of put them back. And that's sometimes how I make my decision, walking along those shelves and picking out those books, you know. So that's a great sort of privilege, really.
I mean, it's a bit of a spoiler alert, but I really enjoyed... well, it doesn't matter, does it? I can say what we do as an episode about coming up. But I really enjoyed, I read Glamour Boys by Chris Bryant. And we're doing an episode on that. And I really enjoyed that book. It's very accessible. Again, really interesting story. And you'll hear more about it soon.
Yeah.
We've recorded it.
And we can remember that book because it was the last month or so.
2 weeks ago, I read it.
It is incredible, though, isn't it? The difference it makes if someone just has that gift for writing well. Do you know what I mean? And being able to actually speak to people. Because obviously even the people who write these really dense historical books, like they put so much effort into it, so much work, years of research. And it's such a shame if it's just not kind of easy to read. It's just such a waste in that respect.
It sort of depends where it's aimed as well, because there's a lot of stories that we come across and the only things written about it, because I might read an article and go, oh, that's really interesting, I'll see if there's a book about that, and the only book is actually, you know, an academic piece on it. But so sometimes we'll do episodes where it's based on an article, really, you know, something that we've read that there might only be a couple of articles about, or, you know, quite a heavy, dry book that I might sort of dip into and, you know, sort of use as reference or whatever. But yeah, there's it's really helpful. If a book really excites you, then you're excited to do the podcast about that. And I've just seen somebody's just put in there about Katja Hoyer's book on East Germany, which I've just started, actually. And she's got a slightly different angle on things, and she's tackling the whole sort of idea of nostalgia and things. So I'm really looking forward to getting stuck into that.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, somebody else has asked to us, we're on this. Many history books are long and detailed. This is Ian Robinson from Chorley. How do you have the time to read them and retain the information? Angela, would you like to answer that one?
No chance. Oh, God, I am so bad at this. So this is something I need to get better at. I listen to the podcast will know that I am not neurotypical. I have ADHD and my brain works in a slightly wonky way. And part of the issues that I have is I don't have what's called a working memory, really. So I read things and pretty instantly forget them unless I've read them many, many, many times. And I think that's why I feel comfortable in this narrow bit of history that I've read so much about that I feel like I've absorbed and I understand and I know and can recall facts about. Whereas if I'm reading something that I know nothing about, if I read a book, I can't sort of read the whole book and then sort of go, right, I've bookmarked the bits that are interesting. I have to take notes on the whole thing so that I have a reference to what I've just read. Otherwise, I get to the end of the book and I don't remember any of it. And what that means is that my process for doing these episodes is so long. And so, for example, there's an episode we did last week and I spent 4 12-hour days writing, making notes
which
from a book
insane.
Before then writing them, which is insane for the amount of money we make on the podcast. But it's a passion project and I do love it. And it's my sort of hobby, you know, and I keep going, I've got to find a better way to do this. And my husband and John are both going, got to find a better way to do this. Because, you know, I'll send John my notes at 4:30 in the morning and he'll be like, what are you doing?
30 pages of notes. 30 pages of notes at 4 in the morning. I wake up next morning and go, oh, Angela, I need to give you a virtual hug.
But it's just, I will work out a process and I'm getting there. And in fact, I'm doing notes today on an episode that's taken me a day. So, and I was really disciplined with myself on. The other problem I have, of course, is hyper-focus is quite a big part of ADHD, if you know anything about ADHD. So if something does interest me, it's not enough for me to know what's in that one book. What's been written by that one person. I need to know everything. And I can't skim over a fact in the book that I don't understand and go, that's probably not relevant for the podcast. I don't need to know that. I'll go down rabbit holes and I'll find, you know, I have to know everything. And that's what I've got to stop doing. Sort of. I remember, just reminded me, when I did Mastermind last year and I did Brutalist Architecture. And when I was revising for that, I read several books and I was revising. And then again, it was about 4 a.m. and I found myself watching YouTube videos of concrete pours. And I was like,
that's
no,
just your porn, that
you don't
is.
Need this. Exactly. This isn't going to come up. You don't need to do this. What are you doing?
I mean, it is, I will say, for me too, it's a fair bit of work. We're not moaning. We love doing it. But you can't do subject justice without reading about it and taking notes and framing a structured story and a chat. So I heard Angela on Off Menu the other week and I sent her a message going, I really enjoyed that. God, making their podcast is so easy.
They just turn up, chat about
food, go home again. That's, you know, but I'm not famous enough or funny enough to get away with that. So we have to do a bit of work.
We made a rod for our own backs a little bit. There is part of us that goes, why have we done this? But, well, obviously we love doing it, John. Otherwise we wouldn't 3 years later still be doing it because we've not made money. That's certainly not our reason for doing it. So we do love it. And I love, John Rennie's just put in the chat Wikipedia. It's tempting sometimes to just go, oh, fuck it, I'll look at Wikipedia and just sort of reword it. But I wouldn't get satisfaction out of doing that. And you don't. Wikipedia can be a useful resource, I think, if you come across something in your notes, you're like, I'm not 100% sure what that is.
Yeah.
And you can just look it up and go, oh, yeah, okay, give you a bit of background to something. But, you know, if people could just go and read Wikipedia, what's the point of us?
It's the quirky little stories that you pull out of books that I think are part of the pleasure of it. You go, oh, God, this detail. But look at this detail here, Angela. I never knew this. And that's part of the pleasure.
Yeah.
I mean, somebody's Caroline on the Q&A. I don't know if people got the Q&A open as well, but somebody, Caroline Smith, has just asked, do we ever cast an eye over the topics other history podcasts have covered? I don't think we do we, Angela, really? We don't, because it's now because you've got...
I like to pretend they don't exist.
A, I don't have time to listen to them. B, I wouldn't want to say, oh, they've done that, so there's no point in us doing that.
It's happened a few times, I think, where we've had episodes on the same topic as another history podcast at around the same time.
Yeah.
And often that can just be a coincidence, but often it can be because we do sometimes tie in our episodes to something that's going on in the news or whatever, and they obviously do the same. So, for example, or it could be, do you remember we did the Profumo affair when there was a drama about it on TV or things like that, you know, that will connect... So obviously, if you do that, other podcasts are doing that as well. So I tend not to look, because like John said, if it's going to put me off doing something I really want to do, then that's, you know, I wouldn't want to go, oh, they've done it, we can't do it, because it won't be the same anyway.
Often as well, it's, you know, you're like we said before, you guys aren't historians, you're learning from other historians, but also you're pulling out the things that you find interesting, which is what you know, that our listeners find interesting as well, right? I mean, Edwina says she loved the Profumo episode, so there you go.
Thank you, Edwina.
Right,
this is a bit of an odd one, and I'm wondering if you know this, because I don't, not a historian. Vinay from Djibouti says, how are James I and James VI the same person? I mean, it's that...
Him King, that's a fairly easy one.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it's James the Sixth of Scotland became James the First of England after the Union, right?
So basically, Scotland had its own kings, separate to England for centuries, and then one day, you know, there were no heirs to Elizabeth I, and the nearest relative was James, her cousin. So we hadn't had a James up until that point in England. So we said, we'll have you. You're James. You could be James the First. And they go, oh, no, we've already had five Jameses.
Oh, John. John's like, I wondered how long it'd take before John did an accent.
That's how they talk about them. And so for them, Elizabeth, the queen that just died, was Elizabeth I for Scotland. And, you know, she was our Elizabeth II. That's the simple answer to that one. That's, we were worried we were going to be asked.
I didn't know we were going to get exam questions.
Yeah.
10 points to both of you. So that was kind of that just showed my ignorance. Storm Moon asks, what is one of the most surprising facts you've learned while researching for the show?
This is Angela's.
No, you haven't. Sorry, I'm.
I've got a genuine piece of the Berlin Wall.
If you say so, John. John, most surprising facts that we've learned. Oh God, that's a
good one.
I've immediately forgotten every episode we've ever done. What surprised us?
Oh, sometimes there's things like, you know, the head of the CIA, Miles Copeland, was the dad of the bloke.
Stuart Copeland's dad,
the dad of the police, and crazy things like that.
The connections that come up can be really...
Oh, that's... Yes, how everyone was... Sort of, yeah. Yeah. Like in the Profumo affair, there was some party with the Russian... you know, naval attaché and Profumo. And I think Sid James was there. And I thought, Sid James for the Carry On film? It's like, that's insane. So those little walk-on characters is quite funny when people are linked. I love those little details.
Awesome.
I think as well, when lots of these stories, particularly in the early 20th century, sort of, you know, interwar and during the war, you have these kind of, obviously, elite circles that people moved in. And so they do pop up in each other's stories quite a lot, and I think that's something that you kind of, when you're just learning about history and you're not au fait with that stuff, you know, you just sort of, oh, these people were all, they were all, had their hand in history, you know. It wasn't just the people sitting in Westminster, it was their mates at home or their, you know, that these ties and these links. And I think just the more I read and the more I learn about who's really kind of pulling strings, or how, particularly as well, I think, how Westminster works, or certainly how it worked in the early 20th century. Really fascinating.
Something that I do is that when I have to study something or research, and when I'm working on different podcasts, I become like an expert for that week on that subject. But then like 2 weeks later and I'm working on a different subject, it's just fallen out of my brain completely. Do you guys manage to... Like, do you feel like you're learning as you're going, or are you like me where you just have to kind of like dump to then upload the next lot?
I think this is where John and I are quite different, because John will be doing a podcast and he'll go, do you remember this is like when we were talking about this in such and such? And because of my lack of this working memory, I will, yeah, exactly, cram for a podcast. It's like cramming for an exam, really, doing the podcast sometimes. And then immediately, as soon as it's recorded, I've forgotten everything that we said in it. But I do that with books. I do that with films. And, you know, so somebody will say to me, oh, have you read, you know, whatever book? And I'll go, yeah, I've read that. And then they'll say, you know, the bit where this happens. And it looks like I've lied about having read the book, because I immediately forget everything I've just seen or read. And it's like that with the podcast as well for me. Whereas you, I think, John, have a brain that just sort of connects things a bit more.
A bit. I mean, when you were talking about your favourite women in the Cold War, I was like, oh, God, yeah, of course, I've forgotten about her. So there's a bit of that with me as well. We're all getting to a certain age.
Yeah. I will say menopause is playing its part as well for me. So we'll put that excuse in there as well.
Wonderful. Graham asks, do you guys ever look around the areas you live for inspiration for potential subjects for a podcast? Has that popped up at all?
It's a good question. I don't know if I have really much.
I was interested in the Windrush, because of them coming to Clapham first. They came from the Windrush and they were putting tents in Clapham Common and in the deep tunnels in Clapham South and Clapham North. And I thought, well, that's got a personal connection here. And the reason I live in a very diverse part of South London is because that's where the people from the Caribbean came in 1948 and settled. So that was an extra bit of interest for me. And then the Perfumo Affair, I grew up next door to Clifden. So that was, I'd always been in my childhood about this thing that happened there. So those affect my interest, I think.
Yeah, I think they're not so much necessarily about the area I live, although maybe you could argue that Saucy Postcards came out of living in Brighton. I don't know, maybe. But I certainly think from our own sort of experiences. So I think my kind of obsession with Germany particularly is from learning German at school and having a German teacher who taught us that stuff. And of course I was learning German at school at the time the changes were happening and reunification happened and stuff. So it wasn't just about learning the language. It was really exciting times because she was German. She was really excited and full of stories and things. So that really connected with me. So I think that's, you know, there's a sort of personal link there that makes it interesting. So, but yeah, maybe I should look more locally for stories. I'm trying to think if we've done any kind of Brighton stories or Kent stories.
Graham Court has just asked, is there enough about the story of the bombing of the Grand Hotel in 1984 that would be local to you, Angela? Now, I just read Rory Carroll's book, Killing Thatcher, and it's a gripping story. And maybe that's one that I could do.
Put it on the list.
I have got, you know, my own sort of little bit of sidebar on that, where I got trawled by the Daily Mail for what I said about that in my first book. So that's a thought. So you said, is it one for Angela? It might be one for me, just having read that book and remembering it so clearly.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Listening, Alison Munro has said after she found herself listening to Mark Steele's podcast. Well, that's great. That gave us a boost, that one. Alice wants to know our favourite episodes. What should we listen to? I don't know. What do you think,
Anne-Marie? I think for me, one of my favourite episodes, because it was an early one when we were like, we don't know if this is going to work, or John and I didn't really know each other before we started doing this. And I remember we recorded it in your house and I was just like, how has this happened? I'm sat in John O'Farrell's... Actually, we're in your bedroom, which is even weirder. Right.
Better acoustics. That's all the only reason.
Yeah, that's what he said. Well, I mean, you know. I think this one we recorded in your kitchen. It was the spy pigeons.
Okay, that's a good one.
Because that story had come out of, it was my birthday, so it would have been 2019, I think. For my birthday, my husband took me to Bletchley Park. So I'd never been, and I'd always wanted to go and have a look around. So we spent the day there. And they had a display about spy pigeons. We sort of walked into this room with this display and we sort of laughed, oh, spy pigeons, ha, ha, ha. And then we read it and it was just fascinating. And then we found the book that Gordon Carrera, I think it was, who wrote the book. And it was so fascinating, wasn't it? And I think you and I both found that really. And that for me was the start of us going, oh, I think we've worked out how to do it. You find a book that really fascinates you, and then you just read it and tell the other person about it.
Yeah.
So I think that's that episode's got a little place in my heart, I think.
And that's a good example of something I didn't know about until Angela, you know, pointed me in that direction. And then I learned something and I thought, well, this is amazing. Somebody just mentioned Sealand. That's Emma Abrook. That's another great example of something I didn't really know anything about. I went, is there enough in this, Angela? And I read the book and I'm like,
I remember you saying that to me. Is there enough in this? I was like, oh, John, there's enough in this.
And now she's maybe a lord of Sealand. I'm actually officially, she may be a lord. I can't find my certificate, Angela, because it's in my filing cabinet. I would have shown
it
now.
I've got some Sealand. I don't know, you won't be able to see it. If I just move my thing, no, I don't think you can see my bar.
Sealand's a drink there, Angela.
Just above the wine rack is a little framed thing with Sealand stamps. That's what that is, isn't
fantastic.
There?
Yeah.
A little frame. There you go.
There's bottles look a bit empty there, Angela.
Yeah, they're not mine. They're my husband's, Ollie's girl.
Yeah.
Cheryl says, thank you so much for doing the story on Mary Seacole. She's from Jamaica and studied Caribbean history all the way up to A-levels, but no mention was ever made. Which is such a sad thing. So, hopefully with slowly, people are becoming more aware of such amazing contributions from people all over the world that should be taught about in world history. It's not just all about Britain, is it, and the empire?
Yeah.
And that's something we
Make ourselves do. I think that's something that I've had to go, I don't know enough about this. I've got to make myself learn about more about the slave trade and more. I'm just reading a book at the moment about the revolution in 1791 in Haiti, about the first successful slave rebellion. And I thought, well, why aren't we taught that? I'm going to learn about it and talk about it on the podcast. Yeah. And that's something that is educating me and hopefully lots of our listeners.
I remember the first one we did, and I really can't remember the book we read. I can't remember his name, which is awful, that was written by the freed slave.
He had a very unusual name.
Olusanu.
Yeah.
Oh gosh, I can't remember his name.
He changed his name a lot.
When we did that episode, we were kind of nervous, isn't the right word, but we, you know, because you're aware of, you don't want to get it wrong, you know, you don't want to, but also you don't want to not do these topics because you're scared of getting them wrong, or because you think people won't listen, or because you think, you know, we wanted to learn about it and we wanted to talk about it. And I think as long as you're up front at the top saying, we're doing our best here, we've just learned about this. And particularly with something like that, where the material we had was very old and contemporary. And so some of what was in it might not sound right today, or might not be, you know, how the story's told today or whatever. As long as you're up front about that, I think we need to not shy away from doing those stories.
Yeah, although we try and do things that also has some potential for comedy, and sometimes you have to go, this is going to be half to laugh about. We can laugh at ourselves and we can laugh about stupid things people have done in history and what an idiot, you know, James the First was or whatever. But, you know, when you talk about slavery, there's not a lot of laughs in there, and no one's to blame who was a victim of slavery. So that means that sometimes it gets a bit heavy, which is tricky, but, you know, we don't want to shy away from things, as Angela says.
Exactly. Again, and I think it doesn't hurt for us every now and then to have an episode that is serious. Like, there isn't no knob gags in, you know.
No knob gags. That's a deal breaker for me, Angela.
You know, I think that's fine. It's not what we want to do all the time, because we're silly people doing a silly podcast. We're not serious historians, and so we don't want to pretend that we are. But every now and then, I think if you come across a story that interests us genuinely and we want to talk about it, then there's no harm in doing something that we don't take this out of.
I mean, just on the chemistry thing, on how we both sort of approach this thing, the questions have flown by on this, and somebody asked a question about how it started. It's sort of a miracle that the chemistry works so well, really, because Angela didn't know me, I didn't know her. I went to see her show in Edinburgh. I just sent out a tweet saying it was really good. And she saw that a few days later and went, oh, thanks for saying that. And then we followed each other on Twitter and occasionally liked each other's posts. And then one day out of the blue, I got this message going, let's do the history podcast. And I was like, well, that sounds fun. And my kids were like, Dad, you'd love that. And But I could have met up with someone who had a different sense of humour to me, or had a different political sensibility to me, or just was someone I didn't get on with. But we get on really well. We become friends. And I think the chemistry is part of the success of it, that we are sort of on the same wavelength about our duty to the truth and our duty and our not being like pompous historians, and just having us sharing a similar sense of humour, making each other laugh, I think is the most important thing.
I think that's really important. If we didn't enjoy hanging out, then this would be a terrible, awful process of, you know, getting the notes together, doing the podcast and all of that stuff. And I think, I mean, I sort of had the advantage of having, before I suggested it to you, I obviously had read your books. I knew that politically we were quite aligned. I knew that. I'd read your, because I drive a lot in my job, obviously, as a stand-up, and I'd listened to your funny history books, your impartial history of Britain, or I can't remember exactly what the title is. Both of them, I'd listened to the audiobooks in my car, and they'd made me laugh. And I'd been thinking about doing a history podcast, and I didn't want it to be heavy or serious. And I thought, well, this guy, this is exactly the tone that I want for the history podcast. So, and I sort of, for ages, I was thinking about it. And then I was like, I can't just ask him out of the blue. This guy doesn't know me. He just saw me do a show once years ago. And then actually, I think it was my husband or someone just went, well, what's the harm in asking? He can only say no. You know, he's too busy or whatever. So I just sent you a message on Twitter and you came back and went, yeah, well, let's do it.
Yeah. And it's been, yeah, downhill ever since.
Downhill ever since, yeah. We've been to my wedding.
Fantastic.
It's been amazing. And we are so lucky that we're going to be having series 8 really soon. You guys have already started recording. So that's coming up. That's going to be, I think it's like mid-September. That's going to launch and a week earlier for patrons, and ad-free for patrons too. But we're coming up to...
Plus you get the T-shirt.
Hang on. All right. Well, while we're talking about I'm not wearing one. Forget, because I forgot.
Look at this. Look at these coasters. These are worth £100.
There you go. I'll put the link in the thing. In the comments box.
Never done product placement before. There we go.
Of course, it can never happen today. Oh, the irony. The irony.
Well, Alison was asking if you can give a teaser for any season 8 topics.
We have done already.
You did one, didn't you? Because of the book you read.
So we've done one. So we've also, well, there's no harm in saying, is there? I don't think we've done, John did an Oppenheimer themed.
Yeah, I mean, beyond Oppenheimer, actually.
He was going to do a film about Barbie, an episode about Barbie, and then changed his mind.
Went to the wrong screen by mistake. So, no, it's about not just Oppenheimer, about Heisenberg in Germany trying to get the bomb, Stalin and Kirchhoff trying to get the bomb, and Tube Alloys, the British operation to try and develop a nuclear weapon, all rolled into 50 minutes. That was an effort.
That was one where John, you sort of said to me, oh, this has been like you preparing a podcast. This one, I've gone through 600 pages of nuclear physics to try and get out the fun bits.
Yeah, all the fun of nuclear physics. So that's one. And then we're talking about, what was the other one we gave away?
Oh, so the Glamour Boys. So yes, Bryant, I won't give too much away, but it's about a group of MPs who stood up, sort of pre-World War II and opposed appeasement, really, opposed the trajectory that the government, that Chamberlain's government was on in its dealings with Hitler, and the sort of reasons why it was this particular group of people that had a bit of inside knowledge about what was happening in Berlin at the time and chose to stand up.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I mentioned that I'm doing the Haiti Revolution. I haven't actually finished the book on that, so it might be that I read that book and go, do you know what, I can't pull this down to a 50-minute podcast. You never know. But I'm hoping to get a podcast out of that. And
I'm currently doing a podcast about the Zimmerman telegram, which is an episode about why or how the USA came to declare war on Germany and Austria in World War I. So how they entered the Great War.
I think that's enough pieces. Don't give it all away. no, that's wonderful. It's really exciting. And I'm so privileged that I get to be there to listen along. I often get to the end and go, oh, I haven't taken any notes. I've been doing it. Forgot that what my job was.
I mean, Anne-Marie says privilege. Anne-Marie's the one who has to listen to us going, oh, bollocks, I've got it wrong. Oh, hang on, let me do that bit again. Oh, hang on.
I'm like, I've stumbled over my explicit words. Yes, there we go.
Yes.
I just thought I'd let you know that our Greenham Common gal, Samsung SM, she said her name's Sarah. So hi, Sarah.
Oh, hi, Sarah.
And she's just asking, just as a final question, which British bunker would you recommend to a beginner, Angela?
Well, there's a question I can ask without having to do any research. So if you want to visit a bunker, it depends where you live. And also depends what sort of bunker you want to visit. But the most impressive bunkers are the regional seats of government bunkers. And so, as somebody's just put in the chat, Hack Green in Cheshire, around that way, is a brilliant example, and it's been really good restoration. What happened after these nuclear bunkers were decommissioned in the early 90s is a lot of them were just returned to the original landowners. And some have done better jobs of restoring them accurately than others have. So there's Kelvedon Hatch in Essex, which is an incredible bunker and worth seeing. But just some of the stuff in there, maybe take with a pinch of salt. There's the bunker that is my personal favourite, where I actually had my hen do, and I'm a patron of the Restoration Project, which is, John's just slapping his head in despair, is the Craigie Barn bunker in Dundee. And that was a Royal Observer Corps headquarters, so it's quite a big bunker, maybe it held about 100 people, and the team there have done a painstaking restoration project. I mean, it's insane how good it is. And then all over the country, if you Google Royal Observer Corps monitoring posts, they're in these little hatches in the countryside. In fact, I've got right here, honestly, I didn't know this question was going to be asked, but I've got, this is my bunker book. This lists all the bunkers in the country. So this is my little bunker Bible. It's just called Cold War Secret Nuclear Bunkers.
Oh my God. Somebody saw that in a bookshop, went, right, that's Christmas sorted with Angela.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I bought that when I first discovered about these Royal Observer Corps monitoring posts. I wanted to know where they were because I kept finding them. So for example, I was once just on a walking holiday with my husband in the Trossachs, and he's not into bunkers at all. And I just spotted the ventilation shaft. I went, there's a Royal Observer Corps post over there. He's like, for fuck's sake, I can't even go on a walking holiday without you just stumbling on a bunker. But yeah, the Royal Observer Corps posts, lots of them have been restored and they have open days. So if you're down south, there's the one at Cookfield in Sussex, has open days in the summer. I know if you're in Northern Ireland, there's one in Portadown that has open days. And there was 1,500 of them. A lot of them are derelict now. A lot of them are flooded or full of asbestos or whatever. But yeah, there's a lot of them around.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. And yeah, in the comments box, some other people have put some secret bunker in Scotland near St Andrews is great. Hack Green, obviously.
Yeah, that's one in Anstruther though, in Fife. That's a good one worth visiting.
Mike says the Western Approaches Museum is in a bunker, and that's where they control the convoys. And Rebecca says she was pleasantly surprised by the World War II one in central Liverpool. And Matthew's...
I've not been to that one. I tell you what is worth a visit that I have been to. John, I don't know if you've been to this or not, but the deep level shelter at Clapham South.
Yeah, I've been there. I've been there. That's amazing, yeah.
And the open days there are incredible. That was a World War II shelter that was built for. But it's had so many uses over the decades since. It was a hotel for the Festival of Britain, a penny hotel.
God.
It was, like you say, used to house people coming off the Windrush. There's loads of stuff it's been used for. So, yeah, get to an open day down there. That's really good.
Rhea Sloman points out that all of the nuclear bunkers are signposted secret nuclear bunker on a brown sign.
Yes, they are.
Well, I'm going to just have to wrap things up there, I think. But thank you, everybody, so much for joining us this evening.
We're so chuffed, honestly. Yeah. I thought there was going to be about five of you. So
and you've
thank
all
you
asked
so much.
Such good questions and interesting
yeah,
questions.
Yeah, really good.
You actually have heard them. You've actually listened to them, which is fantastic.
Thank you.
Sorry we haven't been able to answer everything, but we'll be doing it again. So, maybe you'll get your chance.
If you're able to, if you understand how to do it, because I don't necessarily know everything about Zoom, but could you show your appreciation for Angela and John, maybe raising your hand you know, on the dashboard at the bottom. That would be lovely.
No, is that a thing? Oh, look at this.
Hey, there we go.
There you go. Hey, wow. Thank you so much, guys. And yeah, keep yourselves tuned. We'll be releasing new series 8 in the third week of September, but it'll be in mid-September for Patreons. So feel free to check out the page there.
Thank you very much.
Brilliant. Thank you so much.
And thank you, Anna-Marie, for hosting this and making it possible.
Yes, thank you. Job. And for taking us on and whipping us into shape, because we didn't know what we were doing for the first 6 series. So thank you for sorting us out.
No problem at all. I'll see you guys in a couple of weeks. Take care.
You will.
Good night, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
Good night.
Bye.
Bye.
Good night.
History is written and presented by Angela Barnes and John O'Farrell, with audio production by me, Simon Williams. The lead producer is Anne-Marie Lough, and the group editor is Andrew Harrison, with artwork by James Parrott. We Are History is a Podmasters production.